think President Trump should have declared the opioid crisis a national emergency? He met with health officials and members of his administration yesterday to receive an update on the opioid crisis, but he held off on calling the problem a national emergency. And that's despite a recommendation from his own commission on combating drug addiction and the opioid crisis. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We will talk with a guest who is hoping for the National Emergency Declaration. We'll find out why, and we will welcome your thoughts, your questions, and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Have you or do you have a loved one who has struggled with opioid addiction? What would you like to see done from a policy standpoint to counter opioid use? Are you disappointed that President Bush yesterday did not declare the opioid crisis a national emergency? Do you think he should, and why or why not? Let's welcome our guest, Jim Hood. He is the CEO and co-founder of the Connecticut-based Facing Addiction. He was one of the authors, along with Jeb Bush and Dr. Oz, of a piece that ran this week in the Huffington Post called Declare Emergency on Opioid Crisis Now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you for being with us. Well, we just heard in NPR News that the administration doesn't think that the opioid crisis it needs to be declared a national emergency at this point. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I was disappointed and also a bit puzzled because there was so much lead up to this press conference and a major announcement, and then it didn't seem to happen. I mean, it was almost a head fake. You wonder why there was all this talk and all this lead up because the announcement was sort of a non-event, wasn't it? His commission, you know, clearly recommended that he declare a state of emergency. That was their number one recommendation. The other elements were thoughtful, not necessarily new, but still thoughtful. But ultimately, the president didn't make a statement, and his spokespeople said he's not going to do that.
Yeah, it was, I have to admit, we thought that this major announcement after the meeting with the health officials and the cabinet members, that was going to be declaring the national emergency. And then it wasn't. Maybe North Korea distracted. I don't know.
North Korea is a terribly serious situation, and I wouldn't compare the two, but I think there has to be room on the agenda for more than one thing at a time. And he has a commission that's been studying this problem. It is a crisis, and it wouldn't have been that difficult to set the wheels in motion by saying this is an emergency, and we, by doing so, we would ratchet up attention to the problem and perhaps jumpstart some of the actions, some of the resources. I found some of the language really odd because I guess it was Secretary Price said, you know, in so many words, he said, this is already an emergency. It's such a bad problem. It's effectively an emergency, and so we don't need to declare it an emergency. I thought that was an interesting, you know, bit of logic.
Yeah, he said too, we will treat it as an emergency, but we won't call it an emergency.
That's right.
So, what would declaring the opioid crisis a national emergency have effectively done?
Well, I think some of it, to be honest, would be optics. You know, we have this crisis. I mean, we hear about it on the radio, on the TV, literally daily, don't we? And it's the front page of papers. But honestly, we seem to be stuck. I mean, we're continually wringing our hands in over how bad this is, and it's horrible. You may know I lost my oldest boy to this, so I'm, you know, you're talking to someone who sadly has lived through it. It is horrific, but we have to get beyond that and start doing things. Arguably, a state of emergency could have freed up some federal funding. Woefully little is spent on this crisis, and you could free up funding without having to go through the anguishing process of government. You know, we need more money for treatment. when you get into the details, Joy, only 1 in 10 people who suffer from addiction in this country ever receive any form of treatment. That's only 1 in 10. Imagine if that were cancer or heart disease or diabetes. I mean, there would be riots in the street if it were a fact that only 1 in 10 people diagnosed with cancer ever gets treatment. So we need more treatment. There's a thing particularly with regard to the opioid crisis. We have to arm our first responders, police and EMS and fire, with this drug called naloxone. It is a drug that literally can revive many people who have overdosed and are otherwise on the verge of death. It's not widely available. It's not widely understood. We need to train our first responders and arm them with this naloxone. Another thing that declaring a state of emergency would do, and this is a byproduct of the additional funding, folks, particularly opioids, folks who overdose, often are brought to an emergency room, which are generally understaffed. And the emergency room's job is to get people, stable and out, within 24 hours or 48 hours. People who have overdosed need what they call a warm handoff to other medical experts, and they need at that moment to go into treatment. But we don't have enough people in emergency rooms to do that kind of a handoff. So additional funding would help that. And then there are some things that get a little more esoteric, but under the Affordable Care Act a few years ago, an important element was this thing called parity, which is insurance companies must provide for mental health services at the same level they do for physical ailments, for physical health services. The problem is it's not enforced, and many insurers still don't provide for that level of cover. So a lot of words, but the idea of a national emergency would be to jumpstart solutions to this problem by making additional funding available. And clearly, I mean, the president rebuffed his commission. He simply, did an end run and said, yes, it's a horrific problem, and that was kind of the end of it.
Yeah. And I was going to talk with you about the loss of your son and our condolences. Your son died of an accidental drug overdose, and he was not alone. I read a statistic that said 142 Americans a day are dying from drug overdoses.
Yes, that's right. And if it could be worse, it's 350 a day, roughly, die from addiction overall, because you're talking about specifically drug overdoses.
Yeah.
That definitely is the tip of the spear these days. As it comes to pass, alcohol still kills more people than other drugs, than prescription medications. So the figure is close to it's 350 a day. It's somebody every 4 minutes. During the course of your program this morning, there'll be 15 people in America will die, mostly young adults from addiction. And to put it into really, for me, staggering sort of proportions, that is the equivalent of a jumbo jet falling out of the sky every day with no survivors. And when you put it that way, it's breathtaking. Yet we don't really seem to have, in my humble opinion, enough outrage in this country that this is going on. I mean, a jumbo jet of people falling out of the sky every day with no survivors. You shouldn't need to know anything more if you're the president to say we must take dramatic action starting immediately. But he chose not to.
Yeah. We have just a minute before newscast and then lots of time after that. But he did say that he pledged to beat America's opioid addiction problem, saying that we have to stop people from becoming addicted in the first place. What about that?
Well, I being respectful, I would simply say easier said than done. I think a statement like that has to have some specifics underneath it to make it mm-hmm. credible and to give people hope that the thing is really going to change, Joy.
We are talking with Jim Hood, CEO, co-founder of the Connecticut-based Facing Addiction. One of the authors of a piece that ran this week in the Huffington Post called Declare Emergency on Opioid Crisis Now. But President Trump did not declare the opioid crisis a national emergency yesterday, despite that recommendation from his Commission on Combating Drug Addiction. We wonder what you think about this and whether you think it should be declared a national emergency or not, why or why not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Kerr Dean Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Kerr Dean Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Kerr Dean. This is the Ideas Network. President Donald Trump vowed that America will emerge victorious in the battle against opioid addiction yesterday, but he did not declare the epidemic a national emergency as recommended by his own presidential commission on this issue and as hoped by our guest this hour. We are talking with Jim Hood, the CEO and co-founder of the Connecticut-based Facing Addiction, one of the authors, along with Jeb Bush and Dr. Oz, of a piece that ran this week in the Huffington Post called Declare Emergency on Opioid Crisis Now. We're wondering if you think that the opioid crisis is a national emergency and should have been declared a national emergency. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Kerr Dean Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Kerr Dean Show. We also welcome your questions for our guests. We welcome your own experiences with this crisis. Maybe you or maybe a loved one has struggled with opioid addiction. What would you like to see happen? Jim Hood lost his son to an accidental drug overdose. Jim, can you give us the story about your son?
Yes, I can, Joy. So, you know, Austin was just a terrific young man, and I think that's so important for people to understand that not so much about my son, but the folks who are afflicted by addiction and the opioid crisis, for the most part, are like you and me and your loved ones and your children and the neighbor next door and your niece or nephew. We've got to get out of our minds this idea of, you know, sort of those people and their behaviors and moral failing. These are just loving people who are trying to get through their lives. Austin, unfortunately, started like so many teens, started drinking. We found out when he was, you know, 14, and we, of course, sought help because that was not a good sign. And he was using marijuana by 15, and we got him more help. And then we found out he was using prescription drugs, opioids, by the time he was 16. And obviously, we were terrified and did everything we humanly could in the way of help and therapists and wilderness programs and therapeutic boarding schools and more therapists. And, you know, by the time he was 20, he'd been off to college, he was actually doing very well. He was doing better than, honestly, he had been during any time during that six-year agonizing, anguishing, expensive journey. But then, Joy, there was a period of 36 hours that I will never be able to reconstruct. A couple voicemails that didn't make much sense, a couple texts that were confusing. I tried to reach out. He had lost his phone. I tried to get him through a roommate. And then I got a blocked call, and I had a sinking feeling. And about 90 seconds later, I got a call that wasn't blocked, and it was from the coroner in New Orleans telling me my beautiful boy was dead. And I will tell you, it is a soul-crushing, life-changing experience to lose a child. A part of you dies with him or her, and it changes your life's trajectory, and it's what led me to start facing addiction with a group of other wonderful people who have said, we've got to do something about this addiction crisis in America.
Yeah. As mentioned, President Trump said that the key here is to solving the problem is to keep people clean and to not let them get hooked. There is almost a just say no theme to what he said. Let's listen to that.
The best way to prevent drug addiction and overdose is to prevent people from abusing drugs in the first place. If they don't start, they won't have a problem. If they do start, it's awfully tough to get off.
And as you mentioned, Jim, it's easier said than done to just say don't let people get hooked on drugs.
Well, look, and I don't condone any of this, but I think we have to be realistic. We have a society, the vast majority of people, you know, you use alcohol occasionally, which does not mean the majority have a problem, but we have a society that encourages it. We spend billions of dollars on advertising encouraging you to have a drink because your life will be better, your problems will go away, you'll be more romantic, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the reality is the vast majority of people do some of this behavior, whether they should or not. So simply saying everybody should stop so we won't have a problem, you know, is definitionally true. I just don't think it's realistic.
Our guest is Jim Hood, CEO, co-founder of the Connecticut-based Facing Addiction. He thought that President Trump should have declared an emergency on the opioid crisis yesterday. The president did not, vowed to fix the problem, but did not declare it a national emergency. We have full lines, so let's go to Victor in Madison. Hi, Victor.
Hi. Hi, Joy. Look at the inner city. It's always been what we considered an epidemic. If this had been the case in other areas, the community would have been crying out a long time ago. What happened to this war on drugs? And this is my dilemma, and this is my frustration with how we deal with things as a nation and a country. My white brothers and sisters have been medicalized in terms of their trauma and addiction, but black and brown people have been criminalized for their trauma and addiction. As a result of us taking the posture, it's not our problem. Now it is our problem. Now it's a crisis, but it's always been a war. And I'll take my comment off here.
Jim, what was your reaction to that?
Hi, good morning, Victor. Well, sadly, Victor is 100% right. this problem, or our response to this problem historically, has been disproportionately impactful to, as I think he said, black and brown people, and he's simply right. That is a byproduct of the fact that the war on drugs largely meant we're going to lock up people who have a drug problem. And when you understand, and the Surgeon General told us this, you know, we partnered with the Surgeon General in November on a very, very important report. When you understand that addiction is an illness, you scratch your head saying, why are we locking up people who are sick? And then 20 years later, when they get out of prison, they turn to crime oftentimes because they have no other resources. So, yes, black and brown people have been disproportionately affected, and it's a tragedy, and it is a direct byproduct of the war on drugs. And it's chilling to hear the president and the attorney general talk about returning to the war on drugs. It didn't work. We know it didn't work, and it won't work this time. It is not the answer.
Yeah, let's go to Kevin in Crandon next. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Joy. Yeah, just like what I heard your guest say about the drug war. It's, you know, it hasn't worked, and they need to think some more things. But and I'd also like to say, I think to a certain extent, this is just America's latest drug hysteria. Going back, you know, clear back to the Chinese and the opium back in the 1870s. And also, has anybody, you know, maybe it's time to start considering having medical marijuana available, because I think a little bit of that would be a whole lot better and a whole lot safer than doing the opioids.
Before we get to marijuana, and maybe legalizing it. Jim, what about Kevin saying that this, all this talk, all this hand-wringing, all these news stories and commissions when it comes to the opioid crisis, this is just the latest drug craze in America that, you know, that it seems to go in cycles. And I don't want to say he was downplaying it, but is this just the latest, drug craze, and it's going to be something else in 10 years?
Well, I think Kevin raises a good point. The broader picture is the addiction problem overall in this country is getting worse. We have numbers on this, and it is getting younger. It's starting younger, which is very, very worrisome, and that really is the focus of Facing Addiction. We have to do something about the larger problem. But there is a risk, and Kevin raises it in his question, there's a risk that if we put too much emphasis on opioids, we could have some success, but we may not solve the larger problem. I mean, I'm not a historian, but, crack cocaine some 10, 20 years ago was really the focus of the addiction problem, mm-hmm. and crystal meth, before that. The spikes within addiction seem to come and go, but the larger problem doesn't go, and it just keeps getting bigger. So, look, I lost my boy to opioids. You can't find someone who's more concerned, more empathetic. But as we focus on the opioid crisis, we have to solve the larger problem, or Kevin's right. 10 years from now, we're going to be talking about some drug du jour that we may not even know about, and that will be the focus. But the problem, just the bigger problems, remains, and we have to address it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the policymakers were addressing the opioid crisis at first by cracking down on the prescribing of opioids. And then it's my understanding that those who were addicted to opioids, some of them decided to get heroin or another drug off the street.
Heroin, you're 100% right. We have to crack down on the prescribing of opioids. It's ironic, paradoxical, tragic that much of the opioid crisis has been caused by our own doctors mm-hmm. over-prescribing opioids, and that started about 20 years ago because of some very misguided research that told doctors, go ahead, painkillers are not addictive, literally came from the AMA. So, yes, we have to curb the prescription of opioids, but you're seeing it already that, and it's, again, mostly young adults, when they can no longer afford, find, steal, have access to opioids, they often now increasingly turn to heroin. Heroin has never been more plentiful and cheaper in this country. What a combination. Mm-hmm. Never been more plentiful and has never been cheaper, $5 or $10 for what they call a bag of heroin. So, some people are now moving away from opioids to heroin. And now we find out that heroin is laced with this stuff called fentanyl, right. A speck of which can sometimes kill you. Literally just a speck, like a grain of sugar on the counter, can kill you. So now heroin is on the rise, and we have to do something about that.
So Kevin said, hey, maybe we should have at least medical marijuana legalized. I've heard others say just legalize marijuana. It's better to... if somebody wants to smoke pot, then to maybe do opioids or heroin or something else. What do you say to that?
Well, we don't. Facing Addiction doesn't sort of take a stance on that. I mean, as a citizen, I think it's quite clear that you're going to see more legalization of marijuana. There is some demand, if you will, on the part of people who want to be able to smoke marijuana in the privacy of their own homes. Municipalities and states love the taxes, so you're going to see it. But I think there will be an unintended consequence, and that is simply, if you legalize marijuana, there's going to be a lot more of it available in the country, and some of it is going to fall into the wrong hands, kids underage, young, malleable brains. And the thing that has to be worrisome, people say, well, don't worry, it's going to be regulated. Well, two of the biggest regulated industries in this country are alcohol and pharmaceutical drugs, and those are the problem we're talking about. So the notion that marijuana is going to be regulated unto itself is not very comforting.
Pat in Richland County is with us. Hello, Pat.
Hey, good morning. Say, the United States is one of only two countries on the planet that allow pharmaceuticals to aggressively market directly to the citizens. And we've had, right here in Wisconsin, a whole bunch of legislation, special sessions and everything, not a thing in there about holding them responsible. So my question is what do you think about holding the pharmaceuticals responsible? I mean, they can go out and aggressively market this right to people, and then it's like, well, it's not our problem. Taxpayer can pay for it.
Okay. Oh, Pat, I couldn't agree with you more, and I don't understand it. I truly don't understand the aggressive marketing of pharmaceuticals. I mean, look, just as an average consumer, you watch commercials on TV, and they seem to be talking about an ailment that you've never heard of and never thought was possible. But hang on, we have a prescription pill for it. It's almost as if you feel they're creating ailments, and then they have pills for it. There is a statistic that has to be alarming to people. The United States has slightly less than 5% of the world's population, and we consume more than 80% of the world's opioids. I mean, just think of that. Mm-hmm. 5% of the world's population, and we consume 80% of the world's opioids. Whatever you ascribe that to, overprescription or we're all weak, you know, there's something amiss that we are ingesting so many opioids for pain. It makes no sense, and it has to stop.
Yeah, Brandy on Facebook says, I don't know how much declaring it a national emergency would do. Any person can easily get addicted to painkillers. So what are we to do? Not take any at all if we need them? There is a huge stigma for people who do get treatment. Perhaps a better solution is to find ways to manage pain without using opiates. So we have just a minute. Do we need better ways to manage pain?
There's no question, and it's shocking when you talk to many, many doctors. I mean, these are good and decent people, but they actually don't know much about pain management, and they're reflexively, somebody comes in and says, this hurts, and they write a prescription. And you know, there is evidence that acupuncture, meditation, yoga, and other things work. Not in every case, for goodness sake, but often work. And doctors don't turn to those alternate ways of managing pain nearly enough.
We are talking about the opioid crisis in America, and President Trump not declaring the epidemic a national emergency yesterday, though many thought he might. His own presidential commission on drug addiction and the opioid crisis had recommended that it be declared a national emergency. Our guest wanted it to be declared a national emergency because that can come with some policy changes and funding to help combat the problem. We are welcoming your questions, your own experiences, whether you think this should be declared a national emergency or not, or what you think ought to be done to try to alleviate the opioid epidemic. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. President Trump did not declare the opioid crisis a national emergency yesterday. That was despite a recommendation from his Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis. He got an update on the crisis, the epidemic, yesterday with cabinet officials and other health officials. Said he was going to have a major announcement in the afternoon, but then that major announcement was not declaring it a national emergency. Our guest was disappointed and surprised by that. Jim Hood is the CEO and co-founder of the Connecticut-based Facing Addiction organization. He was one of the authors, along with Jeb Bush and Dr. Oz, of a piece that ran this week in the Huffington Post called Declare Emergency on Opioid Crisis Now. Jim, you said you were disappointed and surprised. Do you have any idea what happened?
Honestly, I don't. I wish I had something provocative to say. I don't. I think most people thought it was coming. The recommendation seemed very clear and very forceful. And then we heard that, you know, a major announcement was coming with regard to opioids. And I think most of us thought we were connecting two fairly obvious dots, but we were wrong. And as I said earlier, I mean, in my humble opinion, the major announcement was not a major announcement. I'm not sure I heard any announcement. I said people came up and said a few things, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I honestly didn't hear anything that would rise to the level of news.
It was we need to help people to not get addicted, or, you know, whatever. But anyway, are you still pursuing getting the administration to declare it a national emergency? Your organization was collecting signatures to a letter for President Trump. Are you still going to do that?
Well, we will. I mean, you know, it's one of many things we pursue, Joy. We will do that. We have a huge base. Our organization has, in turn, brought, I think, something now like 650 organizations that represent 35 million Americans who care about this issue together, and we will encourage them to continue to send letters to the president, but also to their representatives in Congress to advocate for, you know, the legislation and the funding that we need to address this issue. Look, this is a journey, and I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, you can think of Facing Addiction as the American Cancer Society of the addiction space. There has never been a national organization that has tried to mobilize and advocate to get rid of this darn problem. The American Cancer Society is 104 years old. They're doing a remarkable job. But this journey is going to take us some time, and we've really got to redouble our efforts here.
Yeah, one caller says that this is a state or local issue. He doesn't believe that federal dollars should be used to deal with opioid addiction. We have seen here in the state of Wisconsin a whole host of legislation to try to combat this crisis. Is this something that should be just done on the state level and the national government doesn't need to get involved?
Well, look, I will be the first to tell you, I'm not a policy expert, but an awful lot of folks who do receive treatment for addiction do it through Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And that funding, even though I guess technically it's dispersed to the states, but that funding does come from federal mm-hmm. legislation. So I think your caller or writer is partially right. The solutions are going to happen locally. But I think an argument could be made that federal funding might be increased for this.
Yeah, and by declaring it a national emergency, it was my understanding that it might free up more Medicaid funding for treatment.
Well, that's right. I think that's exactly right. And again, I said earlier, and I know this sounds stunning, I don't mean to just throw out statistics, but when you realize that only 1 in 10 people who suffer from addiction in America ever receive treatment, that's a root problem. Yeah, we have to have fewer people becoming addicted. I certainly agree with that. But still, people are becoming addicted, and we clearly have to get them treatment.
Terry in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Terry.
Hi, good morning, Joy.
Morning.
Great topic here. In the same vein there, I had kind of concerns about comments from Senator Ron Johnson made to the Green Bay Area Chamber of Commerce back in mid-July on the 14th. And he basically said that treatment doesn't work and went into a big, long story about how treatment doesn't work and that his philosophy is to just say, you know, just say no mentality is how you tackle this. And also, too, he focused on cutting off the supply. But the fact that he focused on that mentality that treatment doesn't work, I think is we're never going to get to where we need to go if that is his line of thinking.
Hi. Good morning, Terry. good observation. I would agree with you. Facing Addiction has a partnership with former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. He issued a seminal report last November called Facing Addiction in America. In his report, in addition to reaffirming that addiction is irrefutably an illness, he says treatment does work. Look, not every time and not permanently. You know, people get treated for cancer. It doesn't work each and every time. But treatment does work. Recovery is a reality. We could have better treatment in this country. I will absolutely grant you that. There are some problems with the industry, but treatment can work. And going back to this just say no mentality is empirically proven not to be the answer.
During the campaign, one of the ways President Trump promised to end the crisis was by building a wall on the southern border to keep illegal drugs from coming in. How about that strategy?
Well, I probably am not the guy to have a long conversation with you about the pros and cons of the wall. But remember, much of what we're talking about here during this hour, much of it is opioids, and that's largely prescription medications that are made in the United States and prescribed by doctors. Yep, the heroin thing, absolutely, a great deal of that comes from south of the border, and it is really an issue. But the core of the opioid crisis would not be addressed by building a wall, because the pills are made in America by American companies and prescribed by American doctors.
Tracy in Fond du Lac is with us. Hello, Tracy.
Hello. I just wanted to mention, your speaker ended up mentioning the doctors prescribing opioids as opposed to alternative methods. But working in the medical community, I think that one of the big issues is the fact that doctors definitely want to prescribe alternative methods such as acupuncture and a pain psychologist. But unfortunately, a lot of the insurance companies will not cover that. So I wanted to address the fact that there are people with chronic pain, but insurance companies will not cover the alternative means to treat their chronic pain.
You're 100% right, and that's clearly a problem. We're trying to work with insurance companies. I think some of them are not terribly enlightened around this subject, although we have had some encouraging meetings lately where certain insurance companies, if they see a prescription come through that based on their data is just too many pills or too strong a dosage or for too long a time, they will unilaterally cut the prescription back to what they think it should be, which is pretty dramatic stuff, but I think it's a great step in the right direction. We have to do all of it. We have to fight this battle on many fronts, and you know, fewer smaller prescriptions for shorter periods of time would be a big step in the right direction, as well as getting insurance companies to cover alternate forms of treating pain.
Thank you, Tracy. Colleen in Mequon is with us. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I just wanted to say that talking about alternative solutions for pain, there are people who are in chronic pain, and there aren't alternative solutions, and they need to be on pain pills. And what I think needs to happen is parents must have their pain pills under lock and key, just like they have their guns under lock and key, so their children doesn't have access to them. You have to remember there are people out there who are in chronic pain, and that they're treated like criminals when they go to the pharmacy to have their prescription filled.
I couldn't agree with you more. In doing the work that we're doing, by no means are we saying, you know, take all pain medications out of the pharmacies and no one can have access to them. That's ridiculous. There are people who legitimately suffer from, you know, debilitating pain. But I will say, you know, there are quite a few studies that say staying on opioids for a really long period of time, even if you don't become addicted, is problematic because the body develops resistances, and it's just not really a very long-term way to manage pain. But I'll leave that to the doctors. Clearly, there are people who need opioids, and they shouldn't be deprived of them. And your idea of locking up the pills is absolutely correct, and everybody should do that.
All right. Well, as we are wrapping up here, what can people do if they are passionate about putting an end to the country's opioid epidemic?
Well, at the risk of being self-serving, you know, some of us have changed our lives dramatically to create this organization called Facing Addiction. And I'd encourage people to go to our website, www.facingaddiction.org, and look at all the things we're doing, and if you agree with the things we're trying to do, support our organization in any way you can. You know, millions of people support organizations that have decided to battle cancer and diabetes and autism and heart disease, and we're trying to do that, you know, with addiction, because the size of the problem deserves a massive effort to address it and to turn the tide.
How confident are you that America will be able to defeat this problem?
You know, I'm very confident because we've done this with the other illnesses I mentioned. They're not gone, but good Lord, cancer is not the death sentence it was, nor is heart disease, nor is diabetes. But you can't make progress if you don't have a massive effort, right? And look at what we've done with tobacco in this country. It is not nearly the problem it was 30 or 40 years ago. Through a concerted effort to curb the products and to educate people about their risks, and we've made great strides, but it takes a movement. It really takes a movement to do this stuff, and that's why we created Facing Addiction.
Thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Jim Hood, CEO, co-founder of Facing Addiction. He was one of the authors, along with Jeb Bush and Dr. Oz, of a piece that ran this week in the Huffington Post called Declare Emergency on Opioid Crisis Now. President Trump did not declare the opioid crisis a national emergency yesterday. Thank you to Bill Martins and to Keely Boltina for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.